Welcome back to Call Time with Katie Birnbaum. I'm so pleased with the response to my partnership with Arts Journal, and I can't wait to write and post even more content for all of you and get to know this new and much larger audience. As always, let me know in the comments or anywhere else if there's anything in particular you want to see, because I love engaging with all of you. And it was especially great to unveil the Arts Journal collaboration with an episode featuring the great Jonathan Bank. I admire him so much. And there's a nice symmetry with this episode because I'll be interviewing someone else who worked on Chains and who I believe will also be featured in the Mint's next play, Noel Coward's Rat Trap. She grew up in an artistic family. In fact, she and her siblings now form the Saunders Collective, which we will have to hear more about. She went on from there to the prestigious Carnegie Mellon Conservatory and then started her professional career here in New York, where she's since appeared at the best of the best off-Broadway and regional theaters, including Barrington Stage, Berkshire Theater Group, Goodspeed Opera House, Theater Works Hartford, the York Theater, and of course, The Mint. She's also appeared in films like The Intern and shows like The Good Cop, Tell Me a Story, and the obligatory Law & Order SVU episode. I've long admired her work on stage since I saw her in Pirates of Penzance in 2016, and I am especially excited to have her on the show because, knowing her personally, she is so thoughtful about the industry and the work that she puts into the world. So without further ado, let me welcome to the show Claire Saunders. Welcome, Claire. Is there anything major I've missed or that needs correction from your bio?
No, that was actually pretty good. I was like, wow, look at you just rattling off the, you know. You didn't say that I originally hail from Seattle, did you?
I don't think I did. So there you go.
There you go. There's the missing piece.
Now it's all making sense. And everyone's like,
now, it fits in together. Everyone was confused before. And now, yeah.
Oh, now we know she's from Seattle. Well, great. As I said, I'm so happy you're here and to chat. I want to start at the very beginning. Very good place to start.
I've heard tell.
I've heard that for many years. We now know you grew up in Seattle, and we know in this super artistic family. And on your website, actually, you talk about how the music, the art, the creativity all started even before you can remember. So was there a light bulb moment where you were like, oh, this is what I want to do? Or was it just like so natural, so in the air that it was just a happy accident?
Well, in addition to coming from an artistic family, we're very much intellectuals. And so all through school, you know, elementary school, junior high, high school, I was in advanced classes. I was, you know, honors programs, AP, all of these things. And while also and we did like the Saunders, we had the most extracurricular spaces. So not only were we doing theater and music and, you know, private lessons on the instruments and those kinds of things, I also played basketball for 10 years. And like I said, I'm working really hard in school. And so while I loved doing theater and singing and music and all those things, I never, it didn't quite occur to me for a while, actually. It wasn't like, oh, I came out of the womb and I was like, I want to be an actor. It really didn't come to me until probably junior year of high school, where I was like, you know, because I had been, like I said, I'd been working hard scholastically for the whole time. And I kind of, as it comes and looms, the college thing of like, what are you going to do in college? I was like, huh, what do I want to do? What do I like doing? And I was like, oh, I guess I really love theater. I guess I really love this thing. And I had the previous year, sophomore year, because as you get older, people want you to be more serious about anything that you're doing. And so the basketball team that I was on, that my sister and I were on and playing in, it was like this, everything took all year round. You know what I mean? Like, so it's not like before when you were younger, you could do seasons of things. So I did a season of soccer and then the next season was basketball. And then like I did a show and those kinds of things in rotation. But as basketball became more serious, they were like, we want the all-year commitment from you, which I had been doing, like I said, but multitasking when you're younger is a little bit more acceptable. And so there had been a point sophomore year that they were basically like, it kind of was clear that I needed to choose between basketball and theater. And I was like, well, I think I'm going to choose theater. And so I kind of let basketball go. And so I was doing theater more. That was one choice that I had made. And then I guess it was, maybe it was sophomore, the summer of sophomore year. Is that right? maybe it was the year summer before that, there was this program in the youth theater that I did called YAPI, Young Actors Professional Intensive. And I learned later that that was very much like college setting in the fact that we had scene study, we had Shakespeare, we had voice, we had like all of, for 6 weeks in the summer. And I loved that. And I was like, yeah, I kind of want to do that all year round. That's what I want to train in. And so as I kind of came to this, as I was deciding about what I wanted to do, I was like, oh, well, this, I love theater, and I can actually go into it. Like I could study it, which is not something that was that I fully had realized. And so, yeah. And then I made sure that the program, a summer program that I did between junior and senior year in high school, I did an Interlochen summer camp, you know, I was just like Damn. Making sure that I did you?
Yeah.
Which one did you do? Did you do the 3 week or the 6 week or which one?
The 6 week musical theater. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What yeah. I did the 3 week, and that was funny. I don't know how you felt about the energy there is so funny because general musical theater kids are a special breed, and everyone assumes in the 6 week that if you were in the 3 week, it's because you didn't get into the 6 week.
That was very much the dynamic. I can attest to that.
And so they all assumed that that's why everyone who was in the 3 week was in the 3 week. And I remember the when we performed at the end, it was suddenly like all of them wanted to be my friends because they saw I was talented. I was like, wow.
That sounds accurate based on my experience as well. What year were you?
Let's see. I graduated 2010. So it would have been 2009.
Okay, yeah, I was there.
So you did. Yeah, I saw it.
There you go. That's saw funny. Me. Anything goes. That's so funny.
That is funny.
I saw you perform as well.
I remember I did Aida. I did. It wasn't Dance of the Robe. Was it Dance of the Robe? No, it was. Oh, The Gods Love Nubia. I sang the solo in that. I don't know if you have any memory of anything.
I do not have super strong, but that's so funny. I mean, people are always like, yeah, I would Interlochen. And then it turns out you were there at the same time. But it's such a big camp and such a big experience that, and as you say, the way I always describe Interlochen and sort of the vibe is that like, it's the theater kids who have never before been considered cool, who are suddenly like the coolest kids on campus and just sort of
totally
rock hard with the power. So that experience lines up with your experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, and after that, I don't know if you, when I was there, I was like, do I want to go here for my senior year? I was like, do I want to like dive into doing the thing already? And I very, very strongly considered auditioning and going and, you know, picking up and moving for my senior year. And then I decided that I wanted to, that I was going to do that in college. And I knew that's what I was going to do. And I was like, well, let me go finish my time at home in the way that I had it in my space already. There's no reason that I need to rush into that. And I think I'm very glad that I went back to Seattle and didn't actually end up going to Interlochen. But yeah, so that was a really long-winded story about how I came to the conclusion. But, and then I auditioned and then wildly got into Carnegie Mellon.
Well, it's such a great school. And now we know that the process for going into these conservatory programs is so competitive. And there are some kids who have been prepping since they were like 12 and these college coaches. It sounds like that wasn't your experience. It was sort of like work hard and then audition for the schools you want to go to. What was your audition experience like when you were thinking about college?
When I decided I wanted to go and I decided I wanted to go to conservatory because there was different kinds of schools, right? You know, I had my sister auditioning for schools the same time as I was, but you know, we had different ideals about what we want to do. She wanted a little bit more of a liberal arts something, and I was like, I want to be in a conservatory. So that kind of limited my search about where I wanted to go. And I think it's so funny kind of what you mentioned about the hindsight of what it is to go into school, because now I have context a lot more for the schools or what it's, or the audition process or what each of the names mean, you know, for each of the schools. But at the time, it didn't, there was like a few, right? And whenever anybody asked me, like, what's your top school? I was like, well, I mean, of course, Carnegie. And then I would name like two or three others. But I didn't know. I mean, in hindsight, I'm like, oh, well, any school that I went to, and I kind of had this at this at the time, but any school I went to, I was clear about making it my experience. I knew that I could do something with wherever I got in and whatever program that was. But I got a, when I decided I was going to audition, there was many different teachers that at the youth theater that I did 50 shows at when I was a youth. And so I got coached by them and I had note cards of, you know, this song, 32 bar, 16 bar. I had like six monologues that I had in my belt, and every school I pulled out a note card that said, this is what I have to, this is what I'm doing for this, because I had worked, you know, all of these monologues, all of these songs for all of them. Yeah, and Unifieds, and yeah, and I auditioned mostly at Unifieds, and then there was like a school or two that I auditioned at a different place, but it was, I, you know, we didn't have the money to go to 18 different schools to audition. But yeah, I think I auditioned for 11, 12 schools, something
wow.
like that.
Yeah, that's a and lot. And you're the youngest of the siblings, correct?
Yeah, I mean, Alana and I are twins, so twins. We are the same age, but I am technically younger than she is, so.
Was there, I assume not, but I have to ask, was there any pressure in your family to be like, you got to go into the arts, or was it sort of like, do whatever you want, and then it's this happy accident that you all ended up here?
Yeah, it's a happy accident. It definitely, I feel very privileged and grateful for the fact that I never felt any kind of pressure for what I should do. Or
well, if you had pressure, you probably wouldn't be doing it, because you would have been like, ugh.
Yeah, I mean, I think that all of us found it kind of gently in a different, I mean, we all did it, like I said, when we were growing up. But, you know, my oldest brother went into music education. Heath, at first, we wanted to study musical theater writing, but the only way you can study musical theater writing as an undergrad is to study musical theater. And then Trent wanted to go into, he went to school, he decided he wanted to go to the conservatory, and then Alana wasn't sure. Anyway, and then we just like all kind of rounded our way into being performers, the four of us who live here. And then my oldest brother is, you know, a music teacher, so still in the arts. But I think we were birthed into the world, into the love of music and art and the appreciation of it. And so, and I think we all had a talent for it, and therefore we liked that part of it too, I think. And so, yeah, and it weirdly, it applied our intellectual brains in a different kind of way.
Where does your brother, who's a music teacher, live? In Seattle?
In Seattle, yeah.
That's far, but it must be nice to have your other siblings in New York and sort of all as resources. I mean, you're all doing not the same things, but different things sort of vaguely in the same field. Do you feel that you use them as resources? I mean, I'm so curious because I'm an only child. So I'm always like, what must it be like to have this many siblings?
Yeah, I mean, I love having as many siblings as I do. It's really a special experience. I was actually just talking to my mom like 2 days ago about like how all of us would be tyrants if we didn't have each other to balance each other out. Yeah, but no, for sure, I use them as resources. And especially when we first moved here, it was, even though I didn't see them all the time, I mean, I lived with Alana for the first three years.
Cool.
Yeah, which was great. And it took us a second to figure out how to be friends. I think that one of the interesting thing about siblings that we found, especially because we're all so close in age, is we weren't very close growing up, because we had to really lean into that dynamics of you're the older sibling and I'm the younger sibling. And, you know, it was like, we're not friends, but we're very much peers, because all five of us are within 5 years of each other. So basically after we turned 21, it was very much like, oh, these are my peers and my friends, and them being in the industry with me, in the same industry that we have a very specific experience with people's perception of us from behind the table, to be able to kind of have conversations that are holistic and nuanced among each other and within our experience has been very helpful and healing and affirming, to be able to be in reflection of each other in that way and bear witness to each other's experiences in that very unique, we look the same, we come from the same background, we understand the context of what you're speaking of when you're feeling experienced or perceived by people, you know, because we are in the business of being perceived.
Totally. Is that I mean, does that take a toll on you being in the business of being perceived?
Yeah. Yeah. Because it's a really tricky conversation with identity. You know, it like you're having this conversation within yourself of understanding how people see you and that being part of the thing that makes you money or gets you jobs. And yet it's dangerous to have it hold weight in how you see yourself or how you value yourself. Mm-hmm. And especially by way of identity and people. Not, you know, when I first got to the city and when we first were entering the professional part of this industry, you know, everyone was like, oh, ethnically ambiguous is so in, like, that's going to be like you're caught, like, so useful to you. And, you know, and I was like, I kind of walked into the city with like, oh, yeah, this is being this kind of nebulous thing that people can't pin down is going to be really useful to me. And that hasn't actually. We've entered into the space of authenticity, but it's like this intersection, authenticity and looking like the thing. And if you and those things don't really line up for me. And so that has caught and it's confusing. It's happened for my siblings as well, that it's just like people want us to be something because of the way that they see us, but we aren't. And so it's been nice and, like I said, affirming to kind of be able to have those conversations with people who have the same experience that way.
Do you think that has changed at all over the course of your time in the industry or not?
Yes and no, because it's yes in the fact that I think have better tools to kind of navigate those things, in addition to the fact that I am more successful when I am not needing to be a certain color or a certain ethnicity or, you know, from a certain place, that when I can be a person and I happen to just be who I am, that has been more successful to me. And that and knowing that and kind of just being in the industry and people knowing who I am, that process has become simpler because I don't have to like prove myself in any way or introduce myself, like people just know who I am, and therefore I get to do roles in 100-year-old plays, and it's not really about that. And so that's, in that way, it's changed, but it very much is still a conversation, especially in this age of authenticity and people wanting to cast in line with the way the character's background, which is both wonderful and tricky, because having to ask people what they are, you know, where their family comes from is a line that doesn't, I don't necessarily think
mentally
is appropriate
illegal.
To cross.
Yeah.
Yep. All of that.
Yeah. So it's interesting. I was going to ask you because, you know, you look at your resume and you have a lot of old plays and musicals. You think of like The Skin of Our Teeth, these shows at the Mint, even something like White Christmas. Is that an accident just based on the market and what you've ended up booking? Or is that something you like doing?
I like doing it, first of all. Second of all, I think it's what's ended up happening. Like I said, people, when they try to fit me in a box, it doesn't go well for them. And it's weird because they have control of it. And yet, like, if I get called in for something so like wanting to fit this archetype or something, right. I never am, even though they know me, I'm like, why are you calling me in for this role? You know that this isn't gonna, that I'm not what you want. And I get very frustrated when I see myself getting called in for something and I'm like, I'm not what you want. So I don't know why you're wasting my time in this way. But I like things with size. And when I say size, I mean like whether that be classical text or older text or older. I mean, contemporary is fun, but I tend to not do them as much. Of course, I want to, but I really do like being able to use my whole... Oh, this is a podcast, so you can't see what I'm doing right now. I'm just, you know, the what it means to hold to have weight in what you're doing, and that I think that's a skill that I have, and not everyone kind of has access to, and I like using my training and my natural affinity for those kinds of things. So I feel grateful and that I get to do fun things like that. So.
Another thing that I think is unique about your career and that I think is really admirable is you seem to sort of do an equal amount of really like serious, cut your teeth on it, straight theater, even though I hate that term, straight theater, and then super fun, even golden age frothy musicals. Is that also sort of an accident, or is that something you always wanted to keep both in your life?
It's funny, I think you can only craft so much. Like when you get to a certain place and you get to pick and choose what you do, I will continue to choose a lot of different things because I like doing a lot of different things, you know, and that's why also it's like keeping things, and I hate that this is a thing, but keeping things on my resume that keep me in the rooms for things, whether that be, you know, like I love doing on-camera work and being able to do those opportunities and those jobs, and then being able to do straight theater, and then being both in the classical space, but then in the contemporary space, and then in the musical space. Like, the more that I get to have all of those things on my resume, the more people will actually cast me in those things, which I think is silly in a lot of ways, that there's this thing that you have to do where you have to climb up the ladder of like, oh, well, if you have this, like you can take the swing job so that they see that you have this on your resume. So then they'll feel comfortable casting you in this kind of role. And it's like, which is unfortunately part of the thing that I think is part of the navigation that the behind the table does with when casting things. And so I feel pretty pleased that I have been able to keep a wide variety of things on my resume because I want to do a wide variety of things in my career.
You mentioned working on camera. Is that something mm-hmm. that you always wanted to do as well? Was it something you got to New York and you were like, well, that's how you make money? Or how did that come to be? And do you really like it?
I do really like it. I would say that my love of acting was birthed on stage. So that's my first love. But on camera, it's really fascinating to me. I really want to continue to do more of it. It's a different medium. It's a different form of storytelling. A lot of what I've done is like go, you know, I'm on set for 2-3 days and I have 6 lines, you know, or 2 lines or a line, right? And while that's fun and that, you know, is a cute paycheck, it's not quite the storytelling that I want to be doing. So I very much have a goal of being able to do more roles that require me to tell a story. And even the film that I did this summer was really fun because I got to actually do a role start to finish versus, you know, whether it be an episodic, you know, a TV show that I show up in one episode in one scene or, you know, but to be able to figure out what it means to tell a story over the course of a film is of great interest to me. So yeah, I would say that my love of on camera is less developed, but I certainly love it and want to continue doing it. But it wasn't until a couple years, probably the end of my schooling at Carnegie that I was like, I think I want to try this. But it certainly has taken me some time to figure out how to do it and what is required of me.
Did you feel like Carnegie prepared you for that on-camera work, or was it very focused on theater?
No.
Okay.
So very, very focused on theater. I mean, we had a single on-camera class, which, again, my context for what I was doing was nothing. So nothing about what I do on camera at this point is based off of what I learned in that class. And what I actually loved about Carnegie was that it was like, I always describe it as, even though I went to school for musical theater, it was like the biggest chunk of my training there was acting. Like that was, I mean, I went into Carnegie being like, I'm a singer. And they ask you, or if you audition for musical theater, they ask you there, they're like, would you consider coming to school here for straight acting? And in my audition, I was like, no, which I'm so glad I still got in, because in hindsight, I absolutely would have gone to Carnegie as an acting major. And because one, the training isn't different, except for the fact that I had one voice lesson a week and some dance classes. But the acting training is very, very much equal and on par with each other. And so that's the strength of Carnegie actors coming out of it is the training that we get in the acting program there.
So you had a great time there and loved it.
Yeah. Yeah. I loved it. I'm not, it wasn't perfect, right? I mean, no, I mean, there's a lot of tricky things about what it means to go to school for this, like I said, this perceptive art, you know, the emotional abuse that you go through, or the, you know, your, the conversation you have about your body or how you look and all of those things. And when you're so malleable to the opinions of other people, I think that's a really tricky thing. But I really, I was very determined at the time. And even in hindsight, I feel proud of myself for how it was like both school is about, I think, those 4 years, less about the training or what you're specifically learning about. I think using those 4 years, being away from home for the first time, being, for me, it was a lot about building community in a way that I hadn't gotten to, because I was constantly surrounded by my family, which, you know, I love them, but I was very like, I want to have my own friends and I want to have my own space. And it was very much about that for me, and about like finding my own and being able to stand on my own 2 feet and have an exploration of who I am, or, you know, get to know myself. And I very much got that there. And I loved the people I was around, and I loved what I was doing. And I, even though it was like really hard a lot of times, it was like, I was working hard, and I like working hard, and I like getting the feedback of what it means to get better at something. And so, yeah, I really liked being in, and structure. Is love structure. I thrive in structure. I miss that.
I love structure too. I'm a Virgo. I can't help it. Love structure.
Yeah. Oh, wait. That means your birthday just happened? Has it happened?
September 1st. Yeah. Early. Oh, yeah. Thank you. Yeah. What is your sign, may I ask? I feel like I knew that.
I'm in chains, but I forgot. I'm an Aquarius.
Oh, beautiful.
Very beautiful. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Libra, and then Libra rising, and Leo moon.
That's a cool chart. You mentioned earlier this transition from college into New York. And I feel like it's a question I ask a lot of my younger, early-ish career guests about, because I feel like, I mean, speaking of structure, school has this amazing structure. And I think for me, certainly one of the most challenging things about becoming an artist is being thrown from that super structured environment into the least structured field you can imagine. Mm-hmm. And as you talk about the business of perception, suddenly you're doing it professionally for the first time. And well, of course, as you say, I think that's really difficult when you're super malleable. When you're young, I think that can be really tough and challenging to navigate as a young adult. So what was that transition like? And I know you mentioned too, a lot of your family moved to the city at the same time, having them as resources. Tell me about those first couple of years in the city.
Yeah, it was funny. I haven't actually, when I feel like the first 5 years I was here, it was something that I talked about a lot, especially because having like mentees that, or, you know, like young people that I knew coming out of school, I was very passionate about talking to them about how hard it was going to be, because I was very clear about it. The first year and a half, I would say, is really the strong transition time. And of course it can run into past that, but I think the first year and a half, basically coming out of structure, which I loved how in school my schedule was set for me, my homework was set for me, like what I needed to work on anytime. So all I had to deal with was when I was going to work out, what I was going to eat, and when I was going to hang out with my friends. And that's like the only three things I really had to pay attention to. And then suddenly you leave and all of your time is yours. You have to learn how to have all of your time and be productive. And like I said, the conversation with your value or your worth is really tied to your success, especially in the beginning, I feel. You know, and I went to school with a lot of talented people, and my siblings are all really talented, right? And so you have to learn very quickly that comparison is going to ruin your life. And I had to learn that even faster than perhaps other people, because I think especially having a twin, you know, like that really puts me directly in conversation with myself in that way, that if I held my value against what she was doing or what I wasn't doing, you know, like that was going to get really dicey really fast. And all of my best friends are so successful, are slaying it. And I was very clear about not wanting to let that be the reflection of me or feel so negative, you know. I wanted to be happy for them. So it was a very quick turnaround for me about like, how can I make sure that I have a space where I can, where it is actually joyful when the people around me are successful. So that was part of the transition. I'm trying to remember what the year and a half, it was like, I went and I got a muggle job at, muggle job is what I call the,
it's cute,
side hustle jobs. Yeah. I was a front desk person at a fitness place for the first year. And then where did you work?
At SLT.
Okay. Yep. I worked at Barry's.
Love it. Similar vibe. Yeah,
exactly. Anyway, and then I was a waiter. You know, I worked at Lululemon, you know, in retail. You have to struggle through it. You have to like figure it out. And I feel this way in general about struggle, right? That you can watch people go through things. And I could explain, and I said this to the people that I was close to that were younger than me. I was like, I could explain to you every step of my process of the hardship, of what it means to figure out how to be here. And it still wouldn't help you through it. Like you just have to figure it out and figure out what you need and figure out what it feels like to be you. And, you know, and I feel like it was really hard. And then I felt like I was like, I'm doing it. I'm like being an artist in the city, all of these things. And then of course the pandemic kind of ruined everything. You know, just for my mental health, but it's always a process. I think that life stays hard. I think is how it works.
That's what I've been told. I guess I'll have to find out. Similarly, yeah. We'll have to find out for ourselves. Was Change the first play you had done post pandemic?
No, the first play that I did was actually the summer of 2021. Is that right? Summer of 2021. Yeah, because so Berkshire Theater Group, another home theater for me, and I guess maybe perhaps Mint will become this way since I'm about to do my second play there. But Berkshire, where I did Skin of Our Teeth, they were like that first show. They did Godspell that first summer in 2020. Yeah, so they had kind of figured out how to do theater safely. And they asked me to do Importance of Being Earnest. So the summer of 2021, I did Importance of Being Earnest, which was so fun.
With Harriet.
With Harriet. Fucking love that woman. I had also done Skin of Her Teeth with her.
Right, right.
Yeah. The way that that woman is like a craftswoman and cares about the thing, and she's so serious and weird and so good. And she just like has stayed the course. And she's done so much, and yet she goes back to these little theaters and does these shows and pours everything that she has. Anyway, she's amazing. I love her and I love hearing stories from her. Yeah. Anyway, so I did Importance of Being Earnest. And then that was my first theater job back. I had done two different on-camera things actually in 2020. But first theater was Importance. And then 6 months later, they also cast me in White Christmas.
Right, right.
Yeah. And then Chains. So
I wanted to ask about Chains. Yep. You had a role that was like 8 lines, maybe 10 lines. And yet every single person who saw that show came out being like, wow, I really liked, I'm forgetting her character's name.
Sybil.
I'm terrible. Sybil. I really liked Sybil. Like she so made it her own, super strong response. And I'm curious what your approach to those types of little roles and big roles, are they different processes and what your process is like in general?
Oh my gosh, that's a good question. I think that one of the first things I do is let the script inform wherever I start. So it's not like I have like a 8-step process. It's like, okay, what does it mean for me to get familiar with the world that I'm in? Being a person is important. Like that's the fun of crafting a character, right? Is like figuring out how someone walks or interacts, or being able to keep myself light in that and mobile. And especially when I get things like the costumes, or when you're on stage with people that are so fun. And I don't know. I'm like, oh, it doesn't feel like that was that different from when I've done like Queenie and the Wild Party, in the fact that I'm still building a person and I still have this text that I have to work with. And these are the things I say, and this is the things I wear, and these are the crosses that I have to make, or these are the dance moves that I have to do, or any of those things. And so figuring out how to connect the dots of the information I get, I would say, is perhaps when the character is filled out.
Yeah. Well, it makes sense that, I mean, your love of Harriet makes sense. My favorite Harriet story is that I did a show with her, the show I got my equity card on at Berkshire Theater Group, which was Arsenic and Old Lace. And as you say, she does all these amazing things in TV and blah, blah, blah. And deep into our run, I would often find her poring over the script in her dressing room. Mm-hmm. And I always tell young actors and other people those stories to be like, she works so hard. And this sort of reverence for the text, which makes a lot of sense, it seems to be where you start, especially given your younger emphasis on scholastic abilities and studies. That makes a lot of sense to me. So you've done all these really cool things, lots of variety, which we love to see. Do you have any personal goals for the next few years? I mean, you don't have to obviously tell me your deepest goals, but do you any interest in like writing, directing, any genres you haven't done that you're dying to do?
Mm-hmm. As I mentioned, I definitely want to, by way of on camera, I certainly want to do more roles on film. I have a desire to do more indies in a space that is less financially stressful for everyone, right? So that my ability to craft and have control over what I'm doing is a lot greater. But indies are sometimes fantastic and sometimes not, and it really depends. And so there's that kind of space. I very much, you know, as far as like I have financial goals about being able to pay for things with my acting gigs, so that requires a certain caliber of performing. But as far as my spiritual space goes, I'm very connected to understanding that I'm like on some sort of path, that what is mine will be mine and what isn't won't. And I have a lot of ambition. I have a lot of big dreams and goals that I'm walking towards, but I try to hold how I get there lightly, because I don't want to move away from something that could be potentially mine. But as far as directing or writing goes, I don't have specific goals about that. I imagine that directing will be in my future. I think I have a certain eye and passion for helping create spaces, whether that be in a directing space, whether that be to continue to pursue my interest in like intimacy direction and coordinating. I think that there's a lot of good work going on in that kind of space. As far as writing goes, I have a gentle interest in writing, but nothing specific, like I need to write this or this kind of story. But I think I have something about my experience in the world that I want to share, and I don't quite know what it looks like or how to do it. I've dabbled in like songwriting before. As far as like my journaling goes. And anyway, I'm being gentle with myself about how that kind of comes to fruition.
I really love what you said about having big dreams, but taking the path there sort of lightly. I think that's a beautiful articulation. On that subject, do you have, now that you've articulated that so nicely for us, do you have any advice that you would give for aspiring actors?
You know, I think that, as I've mentioned in many different spaces, as we've talked over my career and life, there's a reality that everyone is on their own journey, that the path that takes them on is different. The caliber, the consistency, what's the word I want? Something about the closeness of the opportunities over time. But I would say that getting the job is less or as important as getting to know yourself. I think that in order to be joyful in this life. And I say joyful and not happy because I have a weird relationship with the word happy because I don't know what that's supposed to look like. It sounds like a state of being, and I'm not sure I don't know when that's possible, but to be able to be joyful, to be able to find joy in moments, I think is attainable in at any space and any form of anxiety or depression or, you know, things that I struggle with. But to be able to have joyful moments in your life, I think that requires a presence in any given moment to be able to not necessarily be happy with it, but aware and still. That's something about being dropped in. But again, there's something too much about being dropped in. It's simpler than that. It's like to be where you are and learn from that wherever you are, and that wherever you are is enough in any given moment, and that you will continue to move through things and move away from things. All of that is important and will help your art and make art more enjoyable, or help you shift into whatever else it is you want to do. You know, I think that at any moment, if young artists want to do something else, then they can do something else and they can come back if they want or not, right? That I think all of being able to be open to whatever you want to do or feel called to do or feel called to move away from, I think is valid and important to listen to and not have shame around.
Yes. I mean, I think one tiny silver lining I think that occurred about the pandemic in our industry, or maybe my own personal experience with the pandemic, was that it sort of de-emphasized the get the job, even though we're back to get the job to some extent now. I feel like the forced time off forced many of us to think about other things that made us feel joy and other things that made us feel present, or gave us the okay, for anyone who was like, I've always wanted to do this, gave us the okay to do that other thing. And I think, or I hope for the industry that people carry that attitude with them, as you say, that a knowledge that it's okay to go do this other thing and then come back if you want. It's okay to be doing these two different things at the same time, and that not everything is about, oh, I have to be a 7 EPAs this week. I want to end with a segment, an ending segment. I call it a thank you 5 segment. So it's five rapid fire questions, sort of like the Vogue 73 questions, but shorter.
Okay. I'll try. I'm not very good with rapid fire, but let's try it.
Oh, yeah. And also, a lot of these are favorites, and I know a lot of people have trouble with favorites, so you can only pick a couple. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Okay. So the first is a favorite question. Do you have a favorite show you've ever done or a favorite role you've ever done?
Okay. I really love a lot of things I've done. I'm gonna give a couple. I really did love doing Queenie and Wild Party my senior year of college.
That's a great role.
It was very, very fun. I really loved doing Cecily in Ernest was a dream role for a long time, and to be able to do that was very fun. I really loved doing The Wolves. Great play. I really loved doing school African Mean Girls play. That was really good. I loved it. I mean, and I also loved doing Betty Haynes in White Christmas. That was unexpectedly loved. That everything about that was unexpected. And yeah, I really love old time, being able to sing kind of in jazz space and return to musical theater, which I don't do that often anymore.
True to form, all of your favorites, super wide variety. We have the African Mean Girls play. We have White Christmas. Couldn't be more different, but that's something I love about you and your career. Do you have any dream role or roles?
Yeah, actually, because I just did a Shakespeare yesterday in a reading. Actually, with Lakin, we were doing a reading of Midsummer. So she was Helena and I was Hermia.
Oh my gosh, I would definitely pay to see that, so.
Yeah, it was fun. But Juliet in Romeo and Juliet is a dream role. Joe in Little Women is a dream role. And then there are ones that I don't know about, whether I don't know the play very well or it hasn't been written. I certainly want to originate a role. Yeah. But those are off the top of my head. And Glinda and Wicked, honestly.
Wow. Again, such variety. And I love all of those roles. So casting directors listening, call her up. This is sort of a weird one. I know you have the Saunders Collective with your siblings. Mm-hmm. Do you have like a dream event or evening that the Saunders Collective would put on? Like, what in your dream world would everyone be doing and where would it be?
I really loved doing, my siblings and I did what we call family dinner, the Christmas time of 2019 that I hope we get to return to at some point, but it's a cabaret. People ask us all the time, what were family dinners like? And we kind of, as growing up, and so we kind of went from that question because people ask that all the time and basically crafted a, this is what it's like to be at family dinner, which means that there in that cabaret, there were no less than 45 songs that we did, but none of them had the full song. It was like clip, sure. Clip, 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 clip. We move through things rapid fire, the jokes that come in, the things we move through, all that. So we really enjoyed doing that. And I hope that we get to do another version of that at some point, because I think it's a really good capture of us being able to be ourselves and performing at the same time.
That's so fun. See, when you were talking about your siblings earlier, I was going to ask what the family group chat is like. That's where my brain went.
Yeah, we don't. The group chat, it's far less fun than you think it would be. In person is far more where we are. Eccentric and wild and loud and fast. The text thread is touch and go by way of excitement.
Logistical, as I think most family text threads tend to be. Is there one thing you would change immediately about the theater industry if you had the power?
There are many things that I would change,
but perhaps,
I mean, I think the industry itself is broken, so we like need a new one, you know? But I think that perhaps something about the people who make decisions about what kinds of things we bring to the highest stages, you know, that they are diverse and nuanced thinkers, that they, you know, are not just old white men, you know, with the occasional woman because she's a woman, not because she has good ideas. I just think that we need not only different voices, but different kinds of thinkers. And I think that requires people coming from different spaces, like not just people who are privileged enough to be able to do this because they have money, but the ones that it actually affects.
And
I would change our ability. This is less about the industry, I would say, and more about the people in it, that I think that I've said it nuance quite a few times, but I think that as a collective of the industry, we have an inability to hold multiple truths at the same time. So if there's like one problematic thing that people hear, they'll like leap onto it with like all of their might and all of their social media power without even thinking about, I don't know, the repercussions of like what attacking that might do, like taking away from the jobs from people who need them, or there's a lot of different examples of this, but I hope that moving forward we have an ability to hold multiple truths at once.
I totally agree. I think that's totally a theater specific problem, but also a much larger world problem with the advent of clickbait and social media, and people love to be like, I understand this story and this story is this, and then scream about it when often, as you say, the story is about so much more, and that there can be, as you say, two things can be true at once. Something can be problematic and it can be, you know, valuable in XYZ ways. It's tough. It's tough. And it's one of the reasons why I try to bring guests on the show who think critically about all these things. I just hope everyone in the industry, in addition to being amazing beltresses and dropped into their moments, are also thinking critically about some of the issues that affect all of us. Lastly, my last thank you five. This one, you can take it either very literally or sort of metaphorically. And the question is, what is an actor essential to you?
An actor essential.
So it could be as simple as like my water bottle that I bring everywhere.
I was literally about to say that. I was about to say
no,
water.
Please.
And well, okay, no. I think, well, yes, water and or a physical practice.
Meaning like a yoga workout, something that puts you in your body routine.
Something that puts you in your body, yeah.
I love that. Thank you, Claire. Is there anything else that you feel like we've missed in this conversation that you want to say or you want to plug?
I'll do a gentle plug for the fact that, you know, my family and I have a startup that we will be going public with in the next couple months.
Startup.
It's called Spectrum Media Collective, and we're looking to make some changes in this industry. So
I can't wait to hear more about that, and I'm sure my listeners and readers will also want to hear more about that, especially after this wonderful interview. It was so fun chatting with you. I wanted to have you on the show since we chatted at drinks that one time after Chains opened, and really just a great conversation and a great actor to look out for. You'll see her in Rat Trap, as I said, and look out for this Spectrum Media Collective is what it's called. Okay, yeah. Fantastic. And thank you as always, Call Time listeners. So fun getting to know you, getting engaged with this new audience. Stay tuned for another really exciting guest next week who wears many different hats, and have a great week.